Psalm 68. And I probably, there's a whole lot of Roman numerals in this, and I probably could have combined a few of them. One of the things we need to make sure we remember, and I don't bring this up too often, as we're going through the Psalms and you see the idea of the concept of enemies. And understand that in the dispensation that we're dealing with in the Old Testament when David was writing, and this is a Psalm of David, you were dealing with what is called a theocratic kingdom. A theocratic kingdom. And this is the idea that God is in reality the king of the nation, but he has an appointed viceroy, if you will, who is ruling and reigning over the people. But he is, according to the law of Moses, he is supposed to have a copy of the law that he himself has transcribed or had it transcribed for him. So he has a fresh copy. That is to be his, basically a Bible. And he is to study this, and this is supposed to be the thing that's going to govern his rule is the scriptures. Understand that the Old Testament law, Exodus through Deuteronomy, was basically the constitution of ancient Israel. You're dealing with God's covenant people, a different circumstance than we have today. They were God's covenant people. They operated under the law. So as you read through those Old Testament books, and it's not always easy reading, but you read through these things, there's a lot of things you say, well, I don't see. There are applications and so on, but understand that this was the civil law as well as the religious law of ancient Israel. And I was just reading, I think about a week ago or so, mentioned that when Athaliah, wicked Queen Athaliah, when her son was killed, she wiped out all of her grandchildren and took over as queen. And a one-year-old child was snatched away and hidden. And when he was 7 years old, he was raised by godly people, by Jehoiada the priest and his wife, who was his sister, by the way. The priest's wife was his sister. When the child was 7 years old, they anointed him king without letting the wicked queen know what was going on. The high priest arranged things, made sure there was plenty of armed guards and everything to protect this boy. And he's 7 years old, and it says, and they presented him with the testimony, and he stood by the pillar, and they anointed him with the oil, and they all said, basically, God save the king. And wicked Queen Athaliah, hearing all the commotion, came out and shouted, treason, treason. And of course, they grabbed her, and that was the end of Athaliah. But the point I'm trying to make is they presented him with the testimony. What was the testimony? Okay. You've just been crowned king, and you have been trained. You're only 7 years old, and it's going to be a number of years before you reach your majority. And during that time, Jehoiada will be the regent. Am I using all the right terminology? The regent here. But in the meantime, you're going to be presented with the testimony. You're going to be presented with the scriptures, and this is your. Uphold the Constitution of Israel is basically what it's all about. And so that's what the kings were told. That's how theoretically it was supposed to be. That's what it was decreed in the law of Moses. They were told that this was to be the case. This is hundreds of years before there was actually a king. So this is the Constitution of ancient Israel. This is God's covenant people. God had given them a land by promise. The land was given to them by God. We often think of as you read the book of Joshua, and it talks about the conquest, and we think of guys going in there with bows and arrows and swords and spears and wiping out of it. You know, we have genocide going on. Well, that was part of it, and there's a reason for that. If you go back to Genesis chapter 15, this is all going to come back to what we got here. This is all relevant. If you go back to Genesis 15, where God is talking, and it talks about why were the children, there are several reasons why, but what was one of the reasons why the children of Israel went down into Egypt, 70 people, and were there over 400 years? Why were they down there for 400 years? Well, one was to grow into a nation, because when they went down with 70 and they came out with probably 1.5 million or more, By the way, if you do the math, it's very, very reasonable to do that. In 430 years or however long it was. What was another reason? And this is, God states this back in Genesis when he's dealing with Abraham. This is before Jacob was even born. Before Isaac was even born. He says that the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full or complete. This comes up. I'm giving this to you folks because this comes up all the time. When I was working for the print company here a number of years ago, I had one of the owners was talking about this very thing, and he was all uptight about this. He'd been reading something in the Bible, and it was really bothering him. This whole idea of the conquest. If Leo pops a spring and he goes on a murderous rampage and kills everybody within 100 yards of his house, and then he runs out of bullets and the knife blade breaks, and instead of getting shot down by the police, he gets captured. And he will, let's say this was 20 years ago, 25 years ago, capital offense. And they're gonna execute him. And he will suffer the consequences for his crime. Alright? If you have a nation that is guilty of offenses that are worthy of death, how do you deal with that? And are there nations that have been guilty? Yes, absolutely. Alright. How do you deal with that? Who are the police that are gonna come in and arrest the nation and put them on trial? Well, God's going to put them on trial. And as you go through the scripture, you see that God uses other nations as tools of judgment to punish those who are in rebellion against him. God used other pagan nations to chastise Israel. God used the Babylonians to vanquish the Assyrians. God used the Persians to vanquish the Babylonians. And all this was decreed long before these events happened. You go through the prophets, you see it all laid out right there. And so God uses other nations to bring these things about. This is God's covenant people. God has made a promise to them. And they're surrounded by people, and it's fascinating, that this has always been the case. That Israel is always surrounded, whether they're actually in the land or scattered amongst people, they're always surrounded by enemies. Why is it that anti-Semitism is so pervasive and always has been? I read the book of Esther this morning. Why is anti-Semitism so pervasive? Is it because the Jews are such nasty, awful people? Well, no more so really than anybody else. Scripture says they're a little more stiff-necked than other people, but other than that, okay. Why do you suppose that the world hates the Jews so much? God made promises to these people. When we get to, I talked about this last time, the promises that God made, the covenants are irrevocable. Mentioned that in the book of Romans. We'll get to that in chapters 9, 10, and 11. And so God's promises have to be fulfilled. Well, the devil's every step is to try to thwart the work of God, thwart the plan of God. If I can wipe out Israel as a people, God can't fulfill his word. Well, he can't thwart the plan of God. But the devil's going to keep trying. And so he, all along the way, is trying to wipe out the Jewish people so that God can't fulfill his word. Ancient times. They are in the land. During the time of David, they were by and large obedient. Pagan worship was not a big problem in Israel during David's reign. He made sure that the people, as to the best of his ability, were serving the Lord. He set the example. He is the epitome of a good godly king. There's only two others that even come close, and that's Josiah and Hezekiah, that are said there was none like him that did thus and such and such and such. And so David is the epitome of what a king ought to be. And they're surrounded by hostile nations. What do you do when a nation attacks you or makes an incursion into your territory? What do? Well, you're king. Christians are supposed to turn the other cheek, all right? If I am president of the United States, and they are to some extent, but if I'm president of the United States, throw that one out there, and the Canadians invade, They come spilling over the border of North Dakota. And on their way to Mount Rushmore. And they're streaming in. Is it my responsibility to put a stop to that with force if need be? Yes, I'm the ruler of a nation. I have a responsibility toward that. In this particular case, especially, you have a God-given, because it's part, all under the law. Military is part of the law of Moses. We as individual Christians have a different responsibility, we're under a different covenant. But this was part of God's covenant with ancient Israel. And so military is part of this. And just like if you go back at any of the wars that Israel has fought, 67 war. All right. The Six-Day War. Israel was invaded. Did they initiate it? No, they were invaded. Basically from three sides, three different directions, two primarily. And they won. It's a remarkable thing. I mean, they won seriously. And yet they were vastly outnumbered and everything. And this is, of course, God's intervention, but they were vastly outnumbered and they won. What happened to the occupied territory of Israel after the 67 war? The amount of real estate that Israel controlled. It went up like fourfold. Did they start? That's where the whole West Bank and Gaza Strip and Golan Heights and all that stuff, that became part of, and then for quite a while, the whole Sinai Peninsula. Alright. Did they start the war? But they ended up with more territory after the war. It's very the epitome of irony. All right, David becomes king. He's in Jerusalem when they came and crowned him king, and even before he went to Jerusalem and made it his capital, he was down in Hebron, and the people came after the death of Ishbosheth, and the people from all around Israel came to Hebron, and they anointed David king, and they made him king over the whole nation. What happened right on the heels of that? The Philistines invaded. They tried to get to David, and David went out and consulted with the Lord, Nathan and Gad prophets, told him what to do, and he's victorious. His territory expands. War of aggression on the part of the enemies. That's almost always what you have. You go through David's reign in particular, and the wars that he fought were almost always dealing with aggressors. And the ones that are not, it's a situation where it doesn't say. So, all that. And by the way, it wasn't just the sword and the spear and the bow that Joshua used. The majority of the conquest was done by God. And we're looking at two things that are mentioned in the aftermath. You don't see a whole lot of it actually reading Joshua, but they're mentioned afterward. Two things. What did God use to drive the Canaanites out of the land? Two things. And they worked real well. Hornets. If you have swarms of killer bees coming in, will that drive you out? Absolutely. Flying swarms of fire ants, you know, just think of something like that. Yes, they're gonna leave. And then the insects are gone and you're left with all this stuff just sitting there. Alright. And the other thing was hail. How many of you have, especially if you're from the Midwest or something like that, have had hailstones that, you were running inside because it hurt and you were afraid of serious damage to your skull if you got bombarded? Okay. I have a friend, who is originally from Kankakee, maybe he's still pastors there, Kankakee, Illinois. It's about an hour south of Chicago. And, he's a good buddy of mine in college. I was best man in his wedding. Almost said funeral. And, he's married to a good woman. And, he came back to school one fall, and his car was covered with dimples because they had a hailstorm, and they were about a little bit smaller than a tennis ball, and just bing, 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 you know, all over his car. I think he had to have the windshield and the rear window replaced on it. But that'll do the job as well. So the conquest was in large part by God. And, of course, the stuff where they were actually using force of arms, they were enabled by God in the victory as well. All right, all that, and now I've got 7 minutes to get into the psalm. Let God arise, it says in verse 1. Let his enemies be scattered. Let them that hate him flee before him. As smoke is driven away, so drive them away. As wax melts before the fire, so let the wicked perish at the presence of God. Do we have God out there visibly leading the armies? Not that we know of. The only possible exception to that is when Joshua, before they crossed Jordan, and Joshua went over and he saw, saw a man with a drawn sword, and he says, "Are you for you or for our enemies?" And say, "Nay, but I'm the is the captain of the Lord's host." And so he took up, the response indicates that we're dealing with a theophany, God in human form. I don't think that this one was actually out there at the head of the armies, but it's the idea showing Joshua that yes, God is with you, and he's the one who's actually going to enable you to have the victory. Is it possible, as I've already asked, or I already mentioned, is it possible to thwart the plan of God? If you are opposing God, will you succeed in the long run? No. And if God has made a particular decree, will you succeed? And it doesn't matter what the odds are, it isn't going to happen. Mentioned that we get down to, and there have been numbers of times where there's been serious efforts to wipe out the Jewish people. I mentioned Esther. We have the pogroms of the czars. We have Nazism. We've had the concerted efforts of the Arab nations to push Israel into the sea. We've had numbers of efforts to annihilate the Jewish people. When we get down to the end, and we talked about this on last Sunday night, where the Jews are just almost extinguished at the end of the tribulation. And in Zechariah chapter 14, you're dealing with the city has been taken, and now they're doing the house-to-house cleanup. This is the forces of the Antichrist. And it's all over. After 4,000 years of history, the Jewish people, at that particular moment, it looks like this is it. Someone is finally going to wipe them out. They're going to be gone. Humanly speaking, they're extinct. And that's when the Lord returns. God's plan has to come to pass. And it doesn't matter how well planned out the devil's scheme is, God's plan is going to come about. You can't thwart the plan of God. It talks about the enemies. They're going to be scattered, they will flee, and they use these two illustrations as smoke is driven away. Not last night, but the night before, we're here, I'm sitting in the living room, and here's boom, 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 boom. And look, I don't know if any of you live close enough. The fireworks at the fairgrounds. And so Aaron and I went out and stood in the driveway, and the trees are low enough between our places we could watch the fireworks. It's a little over a mile away, but we're watching the fireworks. And it was clear enough that you could see there was a wind coming from the southwest, and you could see all the smoke going away. It wasn't strong enough to disrupt the fireworks, but you could see all the smoke going away, which is really nice because it didn't include the other stuff that they were shooting off. And you just see the smoke blowing away. I sometimes use some wax or fire starters and stuff to start a fire in a fire pit. And you put that big heart up, and you can't break the stuff. You got to get a hatchet or something to break a big chunk of wax or something like that. But you set it there by the fire and just see it go away. And God's enemies cannot stand before the Lord. And as a result, he says in verse 3, "But let the righteous be glad." If God's people are doing God's work, God's way, and we'll be talking about that a little bit in the morning service, they'll be on God's side. Does this mean that we don't suffer persecution, that we don't suffer setbacks, that we might not suffer even martyrdom? No. But it also means that in the long run, God is on our side. And in this particular era and in this particular day, when we're dealing with, again, the theocratic kingdom, people are so stupid. Pardon me, I'm just blunt. People are so, so stupid, and they don't change. You read the books of Kings and Chronicles, and when you had a good king, things weren't great. They were victorious in battle. They had a great economy. Everything was going gangbusters. And when you had a wicked king, everything crashed and burned. And sometimes you would have a wretched, wretched king followed by a great king. That was not unusual. And all of a sudden, everything would get fixed. And it would be flying high. You'd have some ups and downs and stuff because you may have an invasion. during the reign of the good king, and yet when it's all said and done, they were victorious. Went through that trial, that difficulty. People died. A lot of damage done, but they were victorious. God upheld those people. You would think, after hundreds of years of history, watching the same pattern in the judges that were 400 years before, and seeing hundreds of years of kingdom go by, and see this same pattern, that you know what? It pays to serve the Lord. And people are willing to suffer grave consequences to pursue their own wickedness. Knowing that, hey, it works every time. In this era, it works every time. And in our personal lives, as believers, it seems to be that. This doesn't mean we don't suffer setbacks and so on. But if I want the power of God, if I want to have the comfort of God, I need to be walking in fellowship with Him. And instead, we run off and we do this and we do this and we do this. And then when we get in trouble, we're really shaken, and then we come crawling back to God, because the one that we have ignored and disobeyed and so on, until trouble comes. Ancient Israel is the same thing. People don't change. It is the character of fallen humanity. The righteous, however, those who are walking with God, will be glad, and let them rejoice before God. Yea, let them exceedingly rejoice. Sing unto God, sing praises to His name, extol Him. Riding upon the heaven by His name Yah, which is an abbreviation of Jehovah, and rejoice before Him. When we see God do amazing things, He needs to receive the praise. He ought to receive the praise. It is our responsibility. I love what Leo's been doing. Let's take some blessings, some praises that we've seen this last week. And God would receive the glory for what has taken place in our hearts and lives, and things we've seen and done this past week. We need to have that mentality. So often we'll pray for something, and then it happens. Or we're worried about something that may be, and then it goes away. And we just like, okay, and then we go on our business. We never pause. I shouldn't say never. We seldom pause to thank God for His working. And we need to do so. Here we've got, the enemy is vanquished, and immediately the people are glad, and what's their immediate response? Praise. Praise is the immediate response. It isn't an afterthought. It's an immediate response. That ought to be something that characterizes us. When we see God do something, we need to come back in immediately and thank Him for His grace and for His goodness, and testify to others. We see this time and time again in the Psalms that we testify to others what God has done. Oh, let me tell you about this. I had this answer to prayer. And just share these things. I am delighted that the boys are here. I have been scared to death that their mother was going to keep them out of church. And now she called me at 7:45 this morning. I was up already. Called me at 7:45 this morning. Want to know what time they were supposed to be at my house? I'll take that. I'll take that. And they were at my house on time and cheerful. A little bleary-eyed, but cheerful, right? Instead of this, you know, which is sometimes the case, because the battle is getting them up and having them actually do it. Well, some things happened to at least one of these guys at camp this past summer, and hey, it's church day. I want to get up. I want to go. Pray that'll be sustained. But that's an answer to prayer. All right, let's close. Father, thank You for Your word. Father, thank You that You are worthy of our praise. Father, thank You that You are in control and that no one can thwart the plan of God, even as someone as powerful as Satan himself cannot thwart the plan of God. Father, thank You for who You are. Thank You for answers to prayer. Father, may You receive the praise and our thankfulness and our gratitude. We pray for Christ's sake. Amen. Save your notes. We'll resume this next week.